tuning into the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Woo! Yeah,
welcome back to your Game of Thrones after show. Now, if you guys are watching us on YouTube or listening to us on iTunes, make sure you subscribe and keep chatting with us because we are paying attention to your comments. Later in the show, Sarah over here, we're gonna delve into your comments from last week, right?
Yeah. Well, we've been thinking about it. Last week we had some callers, but we're trying to get in contact with more of you. So instead of callers, we're gonna kind of set up a little bit of a section towards the end of the show where we're going to try and do shout outs for people who rate us on iTunes. We also have a live chat going, so we might be able to check in with that. So if you have questions every week that you want to ask us about the show, or if you catch things, like last week we talked about the statue falling down in Marine, and someone was commenting, I think I have your name somewhere, Mega Moose 1989 was saying how it was just, I liked the name, was saying how it was just an homage to how we always see in war, whether with the U.S. or what, people pulling down these statues. Nice. And really just a reference to the iconic images that we see that. And I thought that was a really good point.
Awesome.
So we are listening to you. Also a thing that, just to get out of the way, you guys noticed, obviously we noticed we're missing Dave. We all love him tremendously.
Aww.
He was not here last week. I'm trying to get him to come in. He's not here because he is so busy. Mm-hmm. He is working on multiple filming projects right now.
He's a busy, busy guy.
And he's like, I'm at 7 days a week right now. He's like, I can't give it the time that I want. But he misses us.
And he has his own station that you guys can check out, too.
Yeah. So we'll get his information out for you guys to keep in touch with him just because we love him, too. Yeah,
absolutely. But we have our host here today. My name's Kyle Maddock. You can find me at Mad Canard everywhere. Right over here,
hello.
I have Autumn Chiklis.
Hello, everybody. I am Autumn Chiklis, and you can find me on Twitter at Autumn Chiklis.
Nice. We have Sarah Stretton over
here. Hello. So good to be back. You find me on here, Popcorn Talk, that sort of stuff. No Twitter.
And the lovely Kristen Snyder to
What's
my
up,
left.
Guys? Happy to see you again. I'm dressed and armored and ready to talk Game of Thrones.
Awesome. And we have a special guest with us here today. You may remember him from MTV's Are You the One? He is in charge of our fan correspondence today. Ryan, say hello.
Dun, 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 dun. Hello, everybody.
Is that
Thanks
your voice
now? This is my sick voice.
Oh.
It's very Game of Thrones.
Well, thank you so much for being here and joining us. Good
sir. There is a live chat role. If you go to AfterBuzzTV.com, which a lot of you are there now, and Ryan is logged in. Are you logged in as Ryan Malady?
I am logged in as AfterBuzzTV. So
to
YouTube.com/AfterBuzzTV and post your questions on the right, and I'll be corresponding them to the panel.
All right.
Perfect.
Well, let's not make him wait any longer. Let's get into this. Today's episode was called The House of Black and White, and let's get some overall impressions. What did you ladies think?
Oh, I'll start, since that awkward pause means one thing to me, is that, you know, I had a couple people after last week for the premiere say, I was expecting more. And I was like, no! Episode one of the season's always like, you gotta get some setup. We had a huge finale. And I was really expecting more this episode. I'm not saying I didn't like it, because I thought there were some good points. But it kept being like, we're going to even push you closer to the edge. But they didn't push me off the edge into some, like, real action. So I was kind of waiting for something bigger to happen.
Okay.
So I feel a tiny bit let down. Not, like, that I'm going to leave the show because I love it like crazy.
Yeah.
But
okay, a little bit let down. A little bit let down.
From episode two.
Nice. What about you, Autumn? What did you think?
Similar feelings in ways. A lot more I remember at one point I was watching it and I was going, okay, now, you know, cut her head off, do something. Like, I kept waiting for something to happen because this is Game of Thrones and something crazy always happens. And towards the end, things started to pick up. But there was a lot more exposition, kind of continuation of the first, which I have no problem watching. I just hope that, like, at this point, I'm definitely okay with it. I'm just hoping that in the next episode or in the episode after that, we start really picking things up and it starts snowballing.
Yeah, makes
Did
sense.
You kind of feel like the biggest parts were what they had previewed to us at the end of last week's?
Kind of. Because, I actually know what you're talking about.
Like, normally when we get a preview at the end of the episode, it's like a snippet of a, like, much bigger scene. So at the end of last week, we saw Drogon, like, perched and about to fly. Yep. We already saw that. And I really didn't get much more from him this week. Oh. Or, like, we saw the slash of a sword on horseback, which we were kind of like, who is Bran seeing? Like, those were the big moments.
And so what you're saying, it was a modern-day trailer, pretty much. It ruined it. Well, it ruined the episode.
I think Kristen? What you guys wanted to see was when we did get, you know, the cutoff of a head, like, we normally get to see that. For Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones is ruthless, and it's bloody, and we expect that now. Mm. And when we don't get that, we're going to be disappointed.
Damn straight.
But, I mean, this was a great episode. A lot happened.
A lot did happen.
We're going to dive into it.
I was a little bored. I don't know if a lot happened in this one.
I think a lot happened. You know?
I don't know.
Happened,
I was a little...
But I feel like it was a lot of setup.
A lot of stuff you got a lot of that last week. So I was completely fine with it last week, because the stakes were high. We had all of these things being people, new worlds interacting. We got more with Stannis and Jon Snow in the same beat. People were liking that. And now we just got another conversation with them.
Yeah.
It's more setup.
I
think we need it. I think we need it so that we all can get on the same page and get prepared for many deaths that I'm sure are to come.
True.
It's going to be an onslaught real quick, I think.
Ryan, any...
Yeah, I'm reading some activity here on the chat, and they weren't so disappointed with the lack of blood or death, but with the lack of nudity.
Of
course. They wanted to see more boobies.
Oh, my gosh. Well, true Game of Thrones fans. Yeah.
We're going to be stripping later on, so just stay tuned, guys.
I don't know about this. Well, you mentioned off with somebody's head, so let's start this conversation with Tyrion here. And even though he didn't lose his head, Cersei is coming after it. He is on the road to Volantis, we find out, and not actually Marine at the moment, but a step along the way, just like this episode in the season.
I feel like Varys just wanted a friend. This man has gone without a friend his whole life, and I think that he captured Tyrion and is taking him on a box, because more than anything, he's been alone in life, and he has found someone who he thinks is like himself.
They're creating great dialogue between these two.
Yes.
We went from talking about shit to this week talking about boxes. And they take these, like, repetitive words and create much bigger worlds out of them. So, like, the shit was just such a reference to what the conditions of their life were. And then this, it was they were traveling in a box. But also the box that they're put in, being that Varys is a eunuch, being that... Tyrion is a dwarf, like, how it has impacted their lives. So I think the conversation and the dialogue, the writers are having so much fun.
I have to say, from a screenwriting perspective, I remember watching, because sometimes we watch it with subtitles, and I was watching the subtitles at one point during that scene, because I remember thinking to myself, oh, you guys are so happy with yourselves, aren't you? I just, like, see the writer's room going, hold up.
So
I got this.
Nice. What do you think Varys is taking Tyrion to Volantis for instead of going directly to Meereen?
I mean, I feel like that's where they need to develop their plan. I mean, he obviously has a plan for how they're going to get into Meereen. Like we talked about, they can't just walk up the stairs. So there's obviously a guy they need to go to get them into a bigger box.
Well, the question is, who is distanced from Daenerys that has... a connection to Westeros. Let's think about that.
So you've got to guess.
Who's no longer in her council or in her good graces?
No, of course.
I'm going to say Jorah.
Yes.
What do I win?
What do I win?
All of our respect really and love.
Nice.
That's what I'm thinking.
Ryan, do our listeners have a guess at all? Or?
Let me see here.
What are they thinking?
Well, they're commenting how queens are falling fast. Eric Reed, the book correspondent, self-proclaimed, he says Varys and Tyrion are a great combo, and both are so smart and see the big picture.
Ooh.
Yes, and nice. Very true.
And
very
it's a lucky nice. Combination that we're getting, because if our book correspondent through the internet, supposedly this is a very, for the show, pairing. They are not a pair. Tim, you would know maybe in the books as much.
Yeah, Varys isn't with him on this journey.
Exactly. So all these conversations are original content, yep. And I think it's just giving them so much freedom and fun and adding a sense of humor to this show.
That's nice.
So.
Absolutely. And what kind of going off of that, I'm going off of you a lot recently.
Because I sit next to you.
Exactly. We are actually the black and white today.
Oh, very nice, ladies.
Our color-coordinated
outfits.
Very nice.
Fit in with episode two very well.
Exactly, the house of black and white.
Nice.
But anyway,
I think we're all wearing black and white. Looking around the room.
We're all the shades of gray.
But
Jorah the Explorer. I just throw that out there.
Nice.
That's fantastic. Yeah, but this episode, I will say, one thing that I did notice, and I said this to you guys before the show, it was really funny. Like, I mean, most of all of Game of Thrones, they have a lot. They have a great sense of humor, but this episode in particular, for me, I thought that there was a big emphasis on the funny, or at least I was laughing out loud a lot more than I normally do.
Someone likes cruelty.
Nice.
Maybe I'm
sick and twisted. But let's move on from Tyrion, because that was a very small scene in the episode. We got a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
But Tyrion's scene leads into Cersei back at King's Landing, because his head is worth a lordship now, according to Cersei. So we go back to King's Landing, and before we get to the head, we get Marcella's necklace on a red viper, a message from Dorne.
A message from Dorne, or a message specifically from Prince Oberyn's, like,
Alaria son.
Because it didn't seem like the Prince of Dorne, the King of Dorne, they were actually wanting to engage in some sort of war and sort of threat. It really seems like it's being pushed by her. So I'm thinking she's the one who
Though she did say that Dorne in general was rooting for it, but obviously he has his comment about, well, it's a good thing that they're not ruling then.
Yeah, but a threat has been sent. Someone took the initiative to go behind everyone's back, have access to this necklace.
Because it's not him, definitely not him.
To tell you the truth, I don't think it's Dorne at all. I think, you know, at this point, people want King's Landing to fall, and it is going in that direction. I think whoever sent the threat is not from Dorne. I think, it could be Peter Baelish.
Let me just stop you right there, because they had Marcella's necklace, and Cersei says the only two people in the world who have it are her and Marcella.
Yeah, and anyone can steal a necklace. I mean, come on.
That's true, but I think they normally have a connecting thread or some kind of clue that would lead us to believe that.
But the brother is completely against, you know, acting on it, so it obviously isn't coming from him. If anyone, it's like Sarah said, Alaria Sons that perhaps sent this. But I don't even think she did. I think her and Cersei are like long-lost best friends in another world.
That's true.
I think neither one of them can see past vengeance. Mm-hmm. And that's what they have in common, and that will be their downfall.
Interesting.
We're kind of blending between Dorne and King's Landing right now. And also to throw out there, we caught a parallel to the last season where the brother said, we do not torture or manipulate or whatever,
mutilate,
thank you, little girls, which is exactly what Prince Oberyn said. Mm-hmm. He said that about his country when he first met, I believe it was actually when he first met Tyrion. He was like, oh, they're talking about Marcella, and he's like, we don't do that to little girls. So that was a very nice recall, and for me it was a nice moment of like brotherly similarity, because they've been positioned as so different. We've always been told, like, Prince Oberyn is this warrior, we know that the country loves him, that he's like this macho sexy man, and that we've been told that his brother is like weak and ill and unable to leave the country. And I felt like that line was a little bit more into insight that they really maybe were on the same page. And I'm really interested to meet everyone in Dorne a lot more, and the sand snakes were mentioned, and I was like, I want to see them.
Well, I think there's a parallel between Dorne Martell and Oberyn Martell and Jaime Lannister and Tyrion Lannister, where one brother is the physical. Mm-hmm. He got that gift, and the other one is much more of a thinker, and he has this disability, and he has to use his brain. So.
But do they have the love that Jaime and Tyrion have?
Possibly, but we're never going to see that interaction.
Yeah,
so.
Unfortunately. But the other thing that does from a dramatic standpoint is it also can be a bit of foreboding or foreshadowing. Because when you bring a recall back, which was redundant. But
when a recall back is redundant. Okay.
Yeah, that was redundant. But when you, obviously, from a dramatic standpoint, when you do that, you can be you're drawing parallels either between characters or between storylines. So which one it is yet, or if it's both, we're not sure.
Mm. Well, what I think is Cersei is very unpredictable in her vengeance, and I think Ilaria is going to go off the rails and do whatever she wants.
Can't wait. Well, Cersei is pretty crazy, as we see in her small council
She's
scene.
She's losing it.
She has sort of taken command, even though she's not the Hand, and she's, as Kevin eventually calls her, the Queen Mother. And whatnot. Mm-hmm. So, but she's bossing everybody around. She sort of has Mace Tyrell in her pocket. He's just a yes guy, it seems.
Can we talk about the fact that she has everyone hunting for Tyrion, and the fact that when they bring his head, Qyburn wants it?
Yeah, what was that? He's like, it'll make my job easier. Well, I guess that's why he's
in this show, because he loves to go through dead bodies, wounds, anything that anyone else would find disturbing. He's like, my birthday present.
So Christmas came early.
Yeah, Ryan, what's up?
We have some fun ideas to what could be used.
The head could be used for.
All right.
The mountain.
For the mountain. The mountain gets a new head.
Yeah, a nice satchel for Cersei.
Oh, a new purse. Okay.
Filled with poison, no doubt.
Nice.
And maybe they should become a writer on the show. That idea's a little out there.
Very cool. Awesome. Later in that, we get the Jaime-Cersei interaction.
Yes.
And this is with the necklace and everything, but Jaime sort of reveals his idea to help out Myrcella. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like he's going to do a two-man mission down to Dorne to steal her out of there? Is that what I'm getting out of this?
Kind of. I mean, what we know, and obviously he goes to Stokeworth.
Yep.
And they have that whole interaction where he says, "Oh, I'm going to get you a better wife in a better castle, or a better lady in a better castle," whatever the quote was.
This is to Bronn.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's pretty apparent that he is interested in the two of them going down there. And he said he's not bringing an army, so I can't imagine them bringing anyone else, really. But what could they possibly do, just the two of them? Would it have to be literally stealing her?
That's what you would assume, is that they are going to sneak in. The problem with this is we've had Jaime sneak before.
Mm-hmm.
When he was trying to sneak across the country with Bran, and people recognized him, and now he's become even more distinguishable because he has one hand. I don't understand how you're going to mask who you are when you are a recognizable figure and you're missing a body part.
If Myrcella just goes missing, I don't think it's going to be exactly good for relations between Dorne and King's Landing. What I don't understand is, yes, they want her back, but what does he exactly... He has to communicate with someone. He can't just steal her, because they're going to realize that she's missing.
The Lannisters are probably the ones who came down and took her, right?
My problem with this whole storyline right now is this is the last thing that King's Landing needs, is for Jaime to leave Cersei, and she's, like, acting king right now. Like,
well, of course, but that kind of makes sense, though, because the thing is, if we're developing Cersei as kind of going off the rails a little bit, which to me it looks like she's becoming so consumed with her own obsession with vengeance and doing what is best and protecting her children, her remaining children, that it makes sense to get rid of the people who would ultimately protect her, or that would keep her sane, or that would give her some perspective. What is it that was said to her at the table, basically surrounding her with people who...
She is just the queen. She is just the mother of the king.
Yes, but more to the point, she said that you're surrounding us with sycophants, which I loved. Yes. Which you're surrounding yourself with people who are just going to pat you on the back and tell you how wonderful you are.
Yeah.
And that's a dangerous thing as a ruler, because you have no one to give you perspective. So I think it makes sense that they're kind of getting rid of everyone in her inner circle that would bring her down to earth.
Yeah, like Kevin Lannister.
I'm just saying, for King's Landing and for the Lannisters, like, sending him away, I just don't think was the right choice for the Lannisters right now.
It depends what their goal is. I feel like Cersei, in losing family members, has now become... Their goals, what they're talking about, is not what's going on in the kingdom. Mm-hmm. It's not what the kingdom needs. It's not about the pressure from the Iron Bank, which are actual government issues. Cersei also ever talks about is how she can keep her family close or get them back. Mm-hmm. Her mindset is not one of these other people who are trying to rule, trying to do power. At least what we're seeing in her conversations is it's really just about family, getting her kids back.
I almost feel like it's herself, really.
Yes.
Yeah.
So she's on a different
tracked.
Oof, it is a different track. And Jamie's track, as we talked before, is leading him down to Dorne. We discussed that quite a bit. Do you ladies have anything else you wanted to talk about down there?
I'm just excited for Bronn to get a new castle and a new wife, because that way I am already over her.
Was that Marjorie?
Lawless?
No.
She's talking about, he promised her a new, Jamie has put a new bride on the table and a better bride on the table.
With a better castle.
I think it was just a kind of an open-ended thing, to be honest.
You don't think there's any intention behind it?
I don't think Jamie, as we learned last week, Cersei thinks he thinks right in front of him. And so he was probably just like, here's an offer, and I'll deal with it if we survive this.
I mean, maybe, but we also have that Jamie is trying to get on Cersei's good side and trying to do anything for his family. And one of the things she listed that she is unhappy about is the smirking whore who's trying to marry her youngest son. He could get another thing on the good side of Cersei if he separates that marriage as well. Mm. Although at this point, who Cersei will be happy with him marrying anyone? Not good side.
As long as we're trying to make Cersei happy in this show, though, like, I'm bored. I hate her agenda, period.
Gosh. Well, yeah, I mean, you should. She's not a decent person. I'd be concerned if you're, like, nice. Team Cersei as morals go.
Yeah.
Ryan, do any of the listeners have an idea of who the new wife is going to be? Or?
Well, we're on kind of a delay.
Oh, we're so on a delay.
We're back at Jamie and Bronn's journey. And interesting point that Eric brought up was that their whole journey is not in the books.
Oh.
No, it's not.
So we got ourselves an unprecedented, non-predictable
adventure.
Wonderful. I love spontaneous adventures.
Oh, yeah. It's. I have no idea where that's going because it is not in the book. So this is all new to me, too. We're venturing into...
None of your predictions can be called spoilers.
Exactly. Well... So yeah, we're on Dorne, and then we already talked about Dorne. We're good with that. Let's go to Brienne and Pod, everybody's favorite dynamic duo,
my gosh.
Right? And let me start off our opinions on this scene. I hated this. What is going on?
Why did you
this
hate
is
it?
So last week we had this goofy scene where, they cross paths and they don't see each other. And then, they go down to the same inn, which is nice and jovial and happy. Mm-hmm. But last season, all the inns were destroyed and burning, and everybody was grumpy, and there was a war going on. And now everybody's happy, and they meet again.
Minutes.
And it was just so many things that seemed out of place to me that it just didn't work for me.
Just too convenient without really any justification or support.
Exactly.
I agree. I feel like it's kind of taking away from... Brienne's one of my favorite characters. I respect her. I think she is... She's obviously loyal. She is a fantastic fighter.
Yes,
her fight scenes are so much fun.
I just love when she slaughters. I just feel like she's standing up for all women everywhere.
I think you just love slaughter. I don't think the first part of that sentence
just
is necessary.
Just kill Brienne. You're making me happy. I carry your sword.
No, between Podrick and Brienne, I do want to see one of them use a little bit more of their intellect. To be finding Sansa or Peter Baelish. Because you talk about when they did find Arya, or even when they got set on the track to go to the Eyrie, part of that was by they ran into the bakery with the wolf, he was saying, like, give this to Arya, so they found out she was alive. Like, a lot of this is being brought up by coincidence, and it's not, they're not tracking anyone down. And Peter Baelish is a very strong figure, and if you know he's with Sansa or whatever you know, I feel like there could be a little bit more detective work.
Okay.
I guess that is what I want.
Interesting.
And
absolutely.
We might get it now because she's saying she might follow them on their trail, so maybe we'll get a little more.
Is that
going
to be her adventure the rest of the season, is them just following Sansa around?
I think obviously Sansa's going to find herself in trouble and unprotected, and then Brienne will be there, and then that's obviously where they will become friends.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to add in one more point about Brienne that... I remembered. It's very interesting to me that the gift she got from Jaime of this set of armor and the Valyrian steel was presented to be, like, go forth and accomplish this mission. But what it's turned out to be, and we're getting a little bit of buzzing, or am I the only one?
Yes.
No, sorry about that, guys. But this was presented as a gift, and it's turned into kind of a bad omen. If you looked at her conversation with the Hound, he also mentioned that he's seen Lannister gold before. So we shouldn't trust her because of the Lannister gold that she's presenting. And we got that again in this conversation with Peter Baelish being like,
your loyalty has obviously been bought by someone. So it's interesting to me that they've taken what was a present and what was something given with such good intentions from Jamie that showed that Jamie was a good man has now been transferred into something that's making people not trust Brienne as much.
Absolutely. I mean, as we all know, people are not exactly quick to trust the Lannisters or anyone associated with them. And despite the fact that I happen to love Brienne as well, she's one of the morally stable people in this series consistently. And to see her wearing obviously something associated with the Lannister, of course everyone's going to kind of... Mm-hmm. No one is going to take her seriously as a chivalrous and loyal person if she's wearing the mark of a traitor.
Mm. I mean, I agree. I think that the logic behind it is sound.
We just know more.
It's like, this isn't even... It's not she's walking across the Golden Lion. Yes, she has a Valyrian sword, but people automatically know who it's tied to and don't trust her. And it's just like that symbol, that stain that the Lannisters have like given her, which was a gift and wasn't something that came out of an evil plan or manipulation.
At the same time, I don't think she's going to abandon it anytime soon.
No.
No. That has saved her life a few times, I'm
not
thinking.
Not when it's Podrick against the world.
I mean, Podrick's just a puppet and useless, and I really hope that he comes in handy at some point.
I agree.
He was getting better at horse riding for about 30 seconds.
Oh, he was good. And then he just went off. And
I'd like to see him bring... he's not going to, though. Because a lot of the time we see... You're talking about the intellect. Or the lack thereof, we see her as kind of the strength, or 100% the strength. He has none. So it'd be nice to see him bring a little...
someone once?
Well, I mean...
All right.
What, big whoop, you kill one person. It doesn't exactly make you a big warrior.
There are other forms of strength in the world.
Oh, there we go.
All right, touche, sir.
Strength of the heart.
He does. Pod is loyal, and that is a wonderful strength to
have. I'd like to see him bring the intellect, though.
He's wonderful in the bedroom.
Oh. Right.
Well, we all have
just have to throw it
there
out there.
There we go.
I mean, people have been asking for more nudity. Let's not forget about Podrick.
All right. Enough of Podrick. Let's head up to the wall, guys. Okay. Let's check this out. Gilly and Sam, another beautiful relationship. No, Gilly is learning to read from Shireen. And we get this little library scene between these three and three people. It's pretty interesting. We get a lot of information in this scene about grayscale. How familiar were you guys with that before? I can't remember how much they talked about it in the show.
I mean, this is the first time I've really learned about it, other than the fact that Shireen, you know, was kept in a dungeon cell and it was obviously contagious. Mm-hmm. And do you guys feel like the Red Woman had to do with curing her?
No, for me, I didn't know a lot about what grayscale was. I knew that she'd been marked with this by birth. I didn't realize it was contagious. I didn't think that. My impression was that they were ashamed. They were ashamed that the princess had been scarred with this, and so they kind of contained her because of that. But we do find out that it is something that normally leads to a full sort of transformation,
a mental
and physical change. But hers was obviously stopped by someone, something, and I'm really interested to know what that is.
Mm.
And
it's
how that happened, because I just don't feel like we've really met.
Yeah, by the way, I think it's a bit of both. I think that there was definitely the element of it's contagious, but I think that once she was cured, there's a reason that I definitely think they were ashamed of her, or at least for a period of time. And I still think that there is a level of, if not necessarily shame, there's a resistance to flaunt her, obviously. Mm-hmm. So I think that there is a level of both going on.
Hmm.
Are you struggling with
fixing my
wardrobe.
Armor, you know.
It's okay.
It's from the Lannisters,
wardrobe
not reliable. what I want to talk about is the fact that Selyse doesn't want her daughter, Shireen, even speaking to a wildling because she feels like they're unpredictable.
I thought she had a really good point.
Absolutely.
About we have learned not to trust people in this show, and she has a completely valid point of don't go, you are the daughter of a king. She views as a king. You are the first person they're going to go after. You need to protect yourself. I don't think she was in the wrong. I think we've just been conditioned to think Selyse is crazy and to kind of abandon her thoughts. But her strategy for what to do with her daughter was spot on.
Oh, I agree with you.
We know we trust Gilly, but going forward, right. Yeah, she should know not to trust just any.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Wow. I was about to say, we trust Gilly because we've seen Gilly be Gilly and know that she's harmless as a fly, and we know Sam's certainly not going to do anything as much as he is Sam the Slayer, which I love.
Does anyone remember what Sam was reading about?
In the beginning of the scene?
Uh-huh.
He was reading about a previous Night's Watch commander, was it? Or a previous Stark?
I remember she read...
Uh-oh, listeners, I don't know. They're going to be tweeting in a second about that.
It was about a star.
It was like an Osric or something. It was
Quasar.
It was like mispronounced. It was with a Q. Said in two different ways, and someone pronounced it correctly, and then I think Gilly mispronounced
ostrich.
It.
Ostrich, yeah.
Yeah, ostrich, she calls it ostrich, and that's what's in my head. But I was like trying to figure out who that was as well, because bringing in another Stark into the mix and their lineage, which was mentioned a lot in this episode, like what Ned did for the realm, how we taught how Stannis brought up that the North has always been uncontrollable.
The Starks is one of the longest running bloodlines in Westeros, so there's a lot of history going on there.
Children the first
men. But speaking of the Stark name, John gets an offer in the next scene. I was very proud of that little segue. Sorry about that. we have a scene between Stannis and Jon and Davos, and Lady Mormont of 10 years old sends a little letter in crayon to Stannis saying she'll only follow a Stark. So Stannis wants to legitimize Jon Snow into a Stark and give him Winterfell.
Which is what he's always wanted.
Exactly. It's like a dream come true, but now he's given an oath and he's learned about loyalty, and it's a lot tougher decision than it would have been if this has happened right when he got to the wall.
Mm-hmm. John obviously has a lot of doors opening at this point.
Oh, man.
yeah.
And a lot of different people, you know, wanting him as commander. He's proven himself. And, I mean, I want to be led by Jon Snow.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't know about you ladies, but...
I'm totally with you. Jon Snow has won me over. I've always liked him, but I definitely wasn't, like, a Jon Snow follower. I know there are people who are, like, crazy about him from the beginning, and I'm not trying to bandwagon, but the more I get to know Jon Snow, the more I understand where you people are coming from.
Mm-hmm. I feel like the setup is fantastic for this, what they've kind of created around Stannis, because he outlines it really thoroughly what he needs. He needs the wildlings. He needs someone to lead them.
Mm-hmm.
We know we need the Night's Watch because we still have White Walkers. They're still there, people.
They're still
don't
there.
Forget.
No,
and then on top of that, he needs to rule eventually the North. Mm-hmm. And is this a position that can be done by one person? Do we need multiple people? How this has played out, we get in this episode, obviously, that Jon Snow is going to be the commander of the Night's Watch. So he's got that. Then he mentions that the wildlings will only be ruled by one of their own. If you remember, we have a wildling who is not sentenced to death, thanks to, mostly, I would say, Jon Snow.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And he was in the foreground of last week's camera angles, so we could get alliance there.
Are you saying that he's going to rule both the Wall and Winterfell? Is that what you're getting at?
Is that Tormund's Giantsbane, which I think I just mispronounced that name. Sorry, guys. He has a relationship with Jon Snow. It's a very strained and fluctuating relationship, but they've traveled together. Jon Snow admitted that he like loved Ygritte to him, basically. Mm-hmm. I think you could see an alliance there.
Absolutely.
I think you could see them work together, which means you'll have, if that ends up happening, if Giantsbane rises to the head of the wildlings, Jon Snow is now taken the head of the Night's Watch, you're starting to create a force that is a ton of men, authority, bloodlines, that could be a serious power. So I just like how they're slightly setting this up, and they're showing you what it needs to rule where.
Hmm.
Yes. And then the next component is who would rule the North.
Very it looks like Stannis will for a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Ryan, we got some comments coming in?
Yeah, just have a couple interesting facts from our fans.
O'Neill
Molardi tells us that the youngest Lord Commander of the Night's Watch was 8 years old.
Oh, right, that's what he was reading.
Yeah.
Oh, there we go.
That was
ostrich.
How did that happen?
Vote. It's all about the vote.
It's all about that vote.
He was a cute 8-year-old.
Yeah.
They had their own Cersei version on the wall.
Yeah.
She was manipulating them.
Oh, he was a cute 8-year-old. What can you do?
Just kidding.
It was the Justin Bieber of the Night's Watch.
What's some more facts?
Yeah,
what do you got?
Eric Reed tells us the Starks have actually held the most Lord Commander titles. And goes on to say that the Starks and the Wildlings are both from the same blood. They're both from the First Men.
The blood of the First Men.
Your bloodlines.
Oh, okay.
All the way back to the beginning.
Very interesting.
Definitely. Where's Benjen Stark? Anyone know that question?
I mean, didn't we see him as like a wildling, a good-looking wildling with like long hair?
That's a sore subject for us book readers. We don't want to talk about that one.
I'll run away.
But
what you were saying really quickly, there was a second there where I thought, okay, are they going to set this up so that Jon Snow, because he has a relationship with the wildlings, because he shot him with the arrow and all of this stuff, is he going to be like the mediator between these two, and is he going to be the sole mediator? Which I was kind of worried about, because then you start having this whole, like, I don't know, it just started to feel tropey almost, if it's just, like, just him. But I like the idea that you brought up of it being an alliance instead of just, like, Jon Snow being the one commander of the wild, because that would have been less a trope, more of a stretch for me, that just because he's a badass mofo, suddenly the wildlings are going to be like, you know what? You're all right. We'll definitely follow you. I thought that was too much of a stretch, but what you said, I definitely could see happening.
Well, when Tormund dies, they will follow Jon.
When Tormund dies.
But there still needs to be a little bit of a bridge to be built.
Absolutely,
that.
I agree.
Interesting. So we mentioned that he gets elected in the next scene. There we go. He wins the vote.
Honestly, at first I didn't want him to, but then when it came to the deciding factor, obviously I did. But that's only because I see his future beyond the Night's Watch, and I just want him to get there sooner.
This was my favorite scene.
Yeah,
I
absolutely
loved it. From Sam's speech, this is why.
Okay.
Sam's speech, him actually getting the courage to make jokes and poke fun at someone.
That was awesome.
And, like, kind of fit in with the guys and get people laughing with him and not at him.
Get respect for himself.
Such a little bit of a win for me. Mm-hmm. I was like, yes. And then on top of that, when you had the Maester, like, smirking specifically, he smirks when he makes fun. He makes fun of,
Jonas
Slane.
Yes, he makes fun for Jonas for like cowering with Gilly.
Absolutely.
And then you see the smirk from the Maester. And then when the Maester gets to put in the tiebreaker vote, I was just like, yes.
That was an awesome
moment.
Those
like three moments just I loved about this scene.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about another badass mofo right now, Arya Stark.
Yeah,
right
she is.
Here, who has reached the House of Black and White in Braavos. I feel like you have to say that with some sort of accent. But this was an interesting little bone. How'd you guys feel about this and this one guy that popped out?
Walter Frey.
Well, she says she's not afraid. And we also learn in this episode that fear is a good thing. And I think it's important that she's going to have to sort of earn her keep here. It's not going to be, you know, she's Arya Stark. And it looks like what we saw coming forward is everyone has to earn their stripes in Braavos. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy that she kind of had it hard for a little bit and she wasn't just welcomed in the door.
Yeah, I'm just going to talk from a cinematic standpoint real quickly.
Oh, yes.
The opening sequence of this episode was magnificently beautiful. The scope and just the series of opening shots was beautiful.
Yeah.
I want a vacation there. I do. I want to go there. They totally sold me on it.
It was gorgeous.
Until the House of Black and White, and then it got creepy again.
I want a tour.
There you go. So we had this guy who came out who nobody recognized. Mm-hmm. He doesn't care about the coin. What's going on? Arya's left out there in the cold for, I don't know, a day or two, maybe
just
more.
Muttering
I'm
names.
Not quite sure. And then eventually this guy shows up again, and he has the coin. And he changes his face.
After she's gone back to her trademark ways of pigeon hunting.
Yes.
Squawk. You had to put that in
there. It used to be cats, and now it's birds.
I think she's had a pigeon before.
Probably.
So
she's probably hunted a lot of stuff. But the Jake and Hagar reveal. Were you ladies excited about that?
Oh, I love
it's Jonathan. Good to see him back.
He's like my second Jon Snow.
Okay. I understand why. You like soft-spoken, mysterious men, then.
I don't
reveal much.
I don't want to reveal too much about myself, but...
I thought this was so predictable.
Oh,
I was
okay.
Not,
what?
Yeah, I was not surprised at all. I don't know if it was the way the camera panned where, like, it went behind Arya's head and we just knew the reveal was coming. But it just didn't get me, especially after we already had the Allie part that was supposed to be surprising because he walks up behind her, and then the next scene you see with him is him revealing. It just didn't get me. I knew it was coming. Mm. Maybe it's because I knew the actor was coming back.
Okay.
So I was just expecting it eventually. Mm. And he's the one who gave her the coin. We don't know where he is. I was expecting him to be in this house.
Mm-hmm.
So I...
What's interesting is I was expecting him to be in the house as well. That didn't surprise me as much. I was just... Because I remember at the end of last season, I was watching with a few friends, and the first thing we said is, okay, she's going to become one of these people. Like, this is where she's going to, like, this was obviously what, none of us are book readers except one who keeps his mouth shut. But, we're like, exactly, he was like you.
Oh.
But,
jeez.
We said, oh, obviously she's going to go to Bravos, and she's going to become, you know, an ever-changing...
Man of many faces.
She's going
we're
to become nothing.
For that.
I'm so excited for that. She's going to become no one. How interesting. So didn't necessarily surprise me. It was just... The reason it got me was I was excited because I felt like, oh, this is going to happen now. Like, this is going to start happening, and we're going to watch this process, and we're going to see, first of all, what he's about and what it is that he does, because... I want to be able to change my face.
I want to be Arya, and I want to be no one.
Nice. What do our listeners want, Ryan?
Well, we were talking about Arya here a little bit.
All right.
Okay. And I was asking, what's your favorite, least favorite thing? Because I feel like it's pretty challenging to find your least favorite thing about Arya, such an awesome character.
Oh, that's a good question.
So, Kosh says her fearlessness is favorite thing, but at the same token, fearlessness is also... least favorite thing, because that's what gets her in a lot of trouble.
Maybe
determination, her willingness to stand up to the bully. But Eric says his least favorite thing is that she will have to give up her name to become a faceless man.
That's very good.
A Stark name, she would have to give it up.
Because we need a Stark, thanks to Miss Little 10-year-old Mormont.
Stark, very nice. Well, very cool. Well, we have one more character to talk about. We're running a little low on time, so let's get to her. Let's get to Daenerys. I believe your spirit animal?
Spirit My person. Spirit animal, Daenerys. I know.
There you go.
She's struggling a little bit. I still think she is fierce. She's a fierce woman, but she's struggling a bit, as any very young person would, being in charge of
all of Slaver's Bay, pretty much.
Yeah, that's intense.
Ooh, but they find, this scene starts off, they find a hidden Son of the Harpy.
That was awesome.
And they take him prisoner. I know, in a very cool scene with Dario showing Grey Worm how you do it. But, yes.
Showing him that fear is important.
Fear is important,
which
as we were just talking about.
Fear, you forget how to hide.
Yeah, it's not just fear, though. It's understanding your enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to place yourself, like, being able to really get inside of their heads and know how they would think so to defeat them. And because the Unsullied think in such a certain way, this was their weakness in finding the Sons of the Harpy.
Very interesting. But we have Mosador. I am saying that so wrong, and I apologize. But they're trying to debate what to do about this prisoner. And Mosador wants him dead. And Daenerys, she's got some more decisions on her plate. And she tries to handle it. She tries to put him on trial. And Mosador doesn't want to have it and kills him. And do you think Daenerys made the right decision in her response to that?
I'm hissing right now.
Really?
Yeah, because here's the thing. She's the ruler of these people. I get that she needs them to fear her in order for them to respect her. However... I mean, I kind of saw this as, like, the gladiator whenever, like, you do the up and the down, right? And the people are saying no, you know? Mm-hmm. The people do not want her to kill one of their own.
You can't say the people. You have to say half the people.
Half the people
this,
were
the
saying
The former
no.
slaves.
Right. Well, yeah, but that's who she wants behind her now.
The hardest part, this is
she
the thing.
She wants the whole city.
She had the line. The law is the law.
Yep.
That's what
she has to follow. And I think that this was a very hard decision. I can't say that she's completely wrong or that I would have done something different because no one's going to be happy about this.
Yep.
If she didn't execute him for breaking the law and going against her and not listening, it would open the door for anyone to be able to do that. Maybe she should have chosen some other punishment, whether it be jailed for a while instead of execution, but she had to do something. She couldn't just let him free. It's like choosing one side or the other. She already has half of her city making secret gangs doing killings. it's just going to provoke them more if she gives the other half mercy when she couldn't give them mercy.
Yeah. I just want to bring up the fact that I think this plotline is actually really interesting. The fact that she has these uprising and these kind of militaristic or, you know, almost guerrilla groups jumping out of nowhere going against her. Because I've mentioned this before, like last season when I would make appearances on this panel. Whenever you are a ruler, you're not going to make everyone happy. But something that we don't see discussed a lot are the fact that you see a lot of discourse, but you don't see a lot of the kind of the rash things that people will do and the harsh extremes that people will go to when they are put in a place of extreme dissatisfaction, to put it lightly.
Yeah.
So what's interesting is I love the fact that they have this issue because it brings up moral questions like these. No, I did not want to see her kill him. I did not. But at the same time, what choice did she have when the law dictates that this is what has to be done? Because if she makes the exception here, suddenly it opens the floodgates for any exception that anyone could bring to her.
Absolutely.
I mean, I don't agree. I think as a ruler, you make your own rules. And if she's going to follow the Mad King, her father, who, you know, has burned men in the past when they were screaming, which reminded me of Stannis. I mean, I'm not saying she's doing that here, but I'm just saying, like, at this point, she's kind of a reflection of that. I just think she needs to make her own rules and not sort of go with, okay, just because this man broke the law, he needs to go now. Like, I just want to see her be her own, because you could see in her eyes this was not something she wanted to do. And I want to see her do what she wants to do.
I think that's looking at things a little too black and white. But on top of that, I think that another interesting point of what they visually showed us in this episode was we did get to see her counsel and who is advising her and how she's trying to pull in people from different ranks, backgrounds, so that every sector of the city has a voice.
Very true.
And you also got that in comparison to Cersei's council, which is comprised of four, I'm going to call them old gentlemen, who she feels she can control. Obviously, she was wrong, which when her uncle flies away.
That speech that Barrison gives her is amazing about her father and everything.
It's awesome.
But in general,
it's wealthy men who are all of the same age, who she's had some sort of relationship with, versus when we get Daenerys' council, you have former slaves, you have former masters, you have someone from Westeros. You have all these different people influencing her.
Absolutely.
Maybe it's not working enough. Maybe she's missing someone.
Maybe.
Or a couple of people.
But I think we have a question. Listener has a question.
Yeah, you know, we actually have a few. We're approaching the end, so I figured I'd just shoot out some rapid-fire questions.
Oh,
rapid fire,
let's do it.
Ready? Quick answers. Ready? Kyle.
What? Oh, I didn't do it.
Amanda asks, what will Brienne do now?
Oh, my gosh.
quick.
She's just going to follow Sansa and be boring.
Oh, harsh.
I can't be boring.
Boom.
Harsh.
Kristen, Akash asks, do you feel that Daenerys will leave Meereen by the end of the season?
Oh, I sure hope so. I hope we leave tomorrow.
Okay, Sarah.
Yes.
Eric asks, predictions on Jon Snow. What's he doing?
Oh, Jon Snow is totally going to start making alliances with the Wildlings, who are going to elect their own leader. He's also going to have to deal with some uprisings from the other not-so-happy contenders of the Master and of the Commander of the Night's Watch people. Yeah. They're not going to be happy.
Nice. And Otto. And Antoine asked, does Drogon still respect Dany?
Respect is a really interesting word to put there. Okay. Respect... I don't know, he flies away at the end, symbolically. I think that there was a moment... the reason I bring up the word respect, I don't know if it's respect yet. I think that it will potentially get there, but I think there was definitely a mutual moment there of understanding, maybe. But I don't think he respects her yet. I don't.
Sarah doesn't have an opinion.
All right.
Please, go ahead.
I'm having a very expressive face. I'm sorry.
Yes,
you did.
You think that he does respect her?
I thought that it was a crazy moment where for a split second I was like, he's come to protect her. All of the guards are at the door and Drogon has come in and he's going to protect her because somehow he knows in his dragon heart that his mother is in danger. And then he started roaring. And I was like, if you're roaring, you're roaring for your siblings.
Roaring for your
siblings. You're going to find them. You're not going to be happy.
One more question.
It's like the Mufasa of dragons. Okay. All right. Quickly, rapid fire, one word answers from all of you. If you could choose a house to be a part of, which one?
Martell.
Stark.
Stark.
Targaryen.
And I would be a Lannister.
Hell yeah. Always paying his debts.
Wearing a
star. Nice. Winter's coming. I don't like the cold.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. So how much time do we have? Do we have time to talk about questions from last week, or are we going into predictions? What's up?
I'd say try to wrap in the next 5, guys.
Thank you.
All right. So I think we should probably go into some predictions.
Let's do it. Let's get that prediction meter. Ooh.
So the questions
now,
open the door.
I want to say that I feel like Drogon, like Sarah said, was coming to help. I feel like he was like, Mom, I'm here to help. I mean, I don't know. Obviously, he's going to do his own thing. He's been doing his own thing. But, like, I want someone to be on her side. And, hey, he didn't even try to bite her. So, I think we're starting off
well. I was cringing at that moment. Like, please don't bite her hand off. Please don't bite her hand off. We don't need 2 handless people in the series right now.
I have a question for all of you for predictions.
Do it. Okay.
We had a list from lovely Miss Arya about people she still wants dead.
Ooh.
And Cersei. I was wondering,
Walder Frey,
who the mountain. You all think Mary is Trent. The next person who's going to die, or you can give me who you want to
the
die.
The order?
I'll can take
the
either.
Order.
Well, you don't even have to give me her people.
Well, here's
I just
the thing about
the next character.
The mountain's half dead.
The mountain's kind of, I'm not sure he's still alive.
Well, you know, Qyburn's got his hands on him, and he's a crazy man, so we don't know.
I'm very excited about that storyline, by the way. Like, we got our own Frankenstein gonna rise here. Like, amazing.
This is not a spoiler, because nothing's happened in the book, but people call the possible being Frankengregor.
Frankengregor. Nice. Oh, my God.
Well, that means
that's
going to
die. So, I don't know. Meryn Trent, I guess I'll go on.
I think the last is going to be Cersei, if that means anything. I think
Do you think that's going to happen this season?
Oof. You know what? I don't know, because I was going to say they'll keep her, but they won't, because it's Game of Thrones, and that means nothing.
There's so many threats coming into King's Landing. Cersei has to go by the end of this season.
You think
Yeah, and I don't know that it's by Arya. I don't know who it's by. I don't know how. I think maybe, the woman, Ilaria. I want Ilaria to kill Cersei.
You want Ilaria to kill Cersei?
Ilaria wants revenge, and I think I want to see those two women go at it.
That'd be an insane catfight.
I want to see it. I want to see it. Neither, they both are angry, and I want to see vengeance happen between two women who are not trained swordsmen. That'd be great.
That'd be
vicious.
Can
you even imagine there'd be stripping of clothing and hair?
I can imagine, yes. Yes, I can.
Knowing that.
Well, there we go. Awesome. Well, any more predictions? I think that's it.
Ryan, did anybody...
Anyone got any
last words from the chat?
Ryan, do you have any predictions?
Gilly's going down, man.
Oh, nice. Awesome. Well, thank you guys.
They all loved it.
Nice. Thank you guys so much for listening to this AfterBuzz TV Game of Thrones recap. My name is Kyle Maddock. You can find me at Mad Canard. Kristen?
I am at Cinematic Escape.
I'm Sarah Shen, but please, again, comment, subscribe. We are going to start doing shout-outs for all of you guys, so if you rate us, we're going to probably read your name.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Autumn Chickless.
And Ryan?
And I'm Ryan Mallody. You can find me at Ryan Mallody.
Nice.
Bye.
Till next Sunday.
Yeah.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.